President Trump just recently returned from his first extensive trip abroad. Since he returned to office for a second term, some critics say it was more about making deals. Several even impacted the Trump family's own business interests and then promoting peace in the Middle East. Here to talk about the president's trip to three countries in that region last week, live in studio with WFIR anchor senior reporter G. Moreno and me, Dr. Ed Lynch, chair of the Political Science Department at Hollins University, who has spent considerable time in the Middle East and has written several books on that topic. Ed, it's good to have you. It's good to see you again.
Nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Now, Ed, we're going to jump right in. What do you make of the president's trip last week? Some say that President Trump should not cozy up to countries like Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Both have been accused of supporting terrorist groups, and that the U.S. should not be taking a $400 million luxury jet from Qatar for the president to use, potentially, as the new Air Force One. Your thoughts?
Well, I would begin with some of the comments by ex-Biden officials who praise this as one of the most successful presidential trips in years. It was about deal-making. I don't think that President Trump made any bones about that. He's going to make deals. So for the critics to say this shouldn't have been about deal-making, I'm not sure why you make a foreign trip if you're not there to make deals. And that's exactly what he was after. He did some very, very important things on this trip. Possibly the most important, long range, has nothing to do with an airplane, has really nothing to do with oil. It has to do with lifting sanctions on Syria. Syria has been under crippling sanctions for years, and the people are suffering horribly. Whatever sins the former dictator might have committed, the people in the street are not responsible for that. Getting those sanctions lifted gives the opportunity to talk to Syria about reconciling with Israel, about stopping some of their support for terrorism, about stopping a civil war that's been going on since 2011 in Syria. All of these things will have an enormous long-term impact.
I guess when you throw out a $400 million potential gift, it kind of clouds, though, Ed, some of the other things that are going on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that that was... accepting that and having that announcement made during the trip was bad politics, bad optics. I think that President Trump is probably thinking, well, here's a chance to save the American people $400 million, the American taxpayers $400 million. But I think he's going to get at least that amount of grief for talking about this, for accepting this, and if things go the way that they look like they're going to, for flying around in this plane at some point or another.
I guess it takes a while to kind of scope it out for security issues and retrofit mm-hmm. it. So this could be, they're saying it could be a year or more, but knowing Trump, he'll want to get it done in 6 months or something.
I can't imagine it would take any less than a year, because for security reasons, you'd have to take the thing apart practically down to the nuts and bolts and make sure that there's nothing there that's not supposed to be there. I've been involved when I worked in Washington. I was involved with trying to clear a room for a meeting to make sure there were no listening devices in there. And this was 40 years ago, when listening devices were 10 times the size they can be now. And that took days to get that room ready. So, it's going to be a while before anybody official flies mm-hmm. in this plane, But it would have been better for the trip overall. It would have focused more on what Trump wanted to focus on had that gift at least been postponed, if not canceled altogether.
You know, maybe with the way Trump works, maybe he's sending even a little dig at Boeing that, look, you've had a contract since the Obama administration, which he kind of tweaked when Trump was in the office the first time. But, you know, if you don't, you got to get with the program. These people are offering me a plane. So that would seem very Trumpian to me.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And, look, his Treasury Secretary was on one of the talk shows over the weekend and said, look, the Boeing news that's important here is that Qatar just signed a contract to buy a bunch of their planes, the biggest contract, biggest single contract that Boeing has ever made. Obviously, a Trump administration official is going to try to take the focus off of the $400 million gift. But that's still a valid point, that this was quite a deal that was made for an American company that employs American workers.
Mm-hmm. We talked with Ed Lynch, chair of the Political Science Department at Hollins University, spent considerable time in the Middle East, has written several books. I do want to bring up, Ed, Democrats in the Senate, including Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, filed joint resolutions last week, which I guess have to come to a vote in the Senate now, looking to block multi-million dollar arms sales to Qatar and the United Arab Emirates without congressional approval, also saying there are entanglements over golf courses, crypto coin investments, and that luxury plane. But, you know, on one level, can you say that this is what happens when you elect a billionaire businessman? He's going to think with a business, you know, mindset, or is it, you know, should Congress be able to weigh in on this, these multi-billion dollar sales?
Well, so of course, Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and they should be able to weigh in on pretty much everything that the executive branch does, and vice versa, I should add. The executive branch needs to oversee Congress as well. That's exactly how the founders intended it, that they would keep an eye on one another. It's astounding to me, after all this time, I mean, Donald Trump has been in the public eye for most of my life.
Yeah, me too.
Either with real estate, with his TV show, with his three presidential campaigns, it's astounding to me that there's still people out there who don't know how he operates, who for whom some of these things still come as a surprise. Donald Trump is a real estate investor. He thinks about deals. He thinks about making deals. He throws out these outrageous proposals, which anyone who knows him knows not to take seriously, but is a starting point. You know, it's like the old saying, any price of anything over $50 is not a price. It's a starting point for negotiation. When you get into $50 million, and when you you know, toss out something like we're going to raise tariffs to 145%, it's astounding to me that people still think that Donald Trump means we're going to raise tariffs to 145%. It means this is a starting point. We need to talk. What's your best offer? He's been doing it since the 1980s, and he's going to keep doing it so long as he has breath in his body, I think. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not saying this is a great technique. I'm saying it's a consistent technique.
Yeah, but I mean, as someone who spent much of my life in New York before I came here almost 30 years ago, Donald Trump was either on the front page or on page six for something. So,
all right, it's 8:51 now at WFIR. We're visiting with Dr. Ed Lynch, chair of political science department at Hollins University. After tearing up a deal the Obama administration and allies signed with Iran, they had about limiting its nuclear capability early in his first term. President Trump apparently now wants to negotiate with Iran again. The bottom line being they cannot develop a nuclear weapon. So why do you think the change of heart? How important is keeping Iran away from any kind of nuclear weapon? And if they have one, Ed, does that set off a race by other countries in the Middle East to develop them as well as a defensive measure?
Well, I would say a couple of things. Number one, when Trump was president the first time, he pulled the United States out of that Iran deal, the so-called Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Even as he did that, though, in, I think, 2019, he told Iran flat out, I'm ready to negotiate a new deal, a better deal. So he's never ruled out making a deal with Iran. I think that he very much wants to. I traveled to Qatar in 2019 and went to the U.S. airbase there, which Trump just visited, and had the commander of the base say flat out, anybody who thinks seriously about going to war with Iran is insane. It's a very powerful country. It has a very powerful military. I think that Trump would very much like to avoid any sort of military conflict. He's all about ending so-called endless wars, not getting into new ones. But the only way to do that and not to allow Iran to deploy a nuclear weapon is to make a deal. He has to make a deal. And the deal is going to involve no nuclear weapon for Iran ever. That would be horribly destabilizing. It's in geographic terms, it's a hop, skip, and a jump from Iran to Israel. The thought of Israel being under that sort of a threat is horrifying, not to mention what you said a moment ago. If Iran's going to have one, Saudi Arabia is going to want one. They're Iran's other main enemy, and that would set off an arms race throughout the Middle East, which could be horribly destructive.
Yeah, so I'm sure that Ed, President Trump went to Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure somewhere it came up what he wanted to do with Iran. So,
yes, I'm sure it did. Iran and Saudi Arabia are mutual antagonists, and they're obsessed with one another. They look across the Gulf from one another. There are parts of the Gulf that are very shallow, parts of it that are very narrow. As I sometimes tell my students, if you can't get along with your roommate, you might be able to get a new roommate. Nations can't do that. They have to live with their neighbors. And one of the reasons that Qatar is so frequently accused of supporting terrorist groups is that they have to get along with Iran. Qatar shares the world's largest natural gas field with Iran. The border in that gas field goes right through their maritime border, or the center of that gas field goes right through their maritime border. They have no choice but to get along with Iran or go broke. I mean, that's their other choice. Saudi Arabia doesn't have that close a relationship, but for both religious, economic, and strategic reasons, Saudi Arabia and Iran, at least under Iran's current government, are natural enemies, and they both look, but particularly Saudi Arabia looks to the United States as an essential partner in making sure that Saudi Arabia isn't aggressed, as they say.
I'm talking with Ed Lynch, the political science chair at Holland University, spent considerable time in the Middle East. I did want to ask you an historical question, going back to the Reagan White House, which you worked for, and even before that with Jimmy Carter hosting Anwar Sadat and Menachem Begin at Camp David. Talk about how unrest in the Middle East and our support for Israel as part of, have always consumed so much of a president's time. It seems like presidents get into office and they want to really focus on domestic agendas or whatever, but they wind up getting involved in the Middle East. Why is that, in your opinion?
Well, there are a number of reasons. First and foremost, Israel is a state that has a unique history. It came out of the unique horror of the Holocaust and the attempted extermination. It has been U.S. interest to maintain a viable, strong, secure Jewish state since 1948. And no president since 1948 has seriously thought to tamper with that. So it's also virtually the only democracy in the area. As such, it is the only natural ally of the United States in the Middle East. All of these are very, very important interests. And you can't talk about the Middle East for very long without talking about oil. That's not a concern with Israel itself, but some of its worst enemies are some of the world's largest oil producers. And until somebody can wave a magic wand and get us another form of energy other than oil that will work as well in as many ways, the United States and the world is going to depend upon a free flow of oil in and out of the Middle East. And that that means, among other things, to secure Israel.
There has been some criticism that Israel was not a stop on this trip to the Middle East, that he should have huddled with Netanyahu. Is there a message being sent there? Perhaps maybe disagreements about how things are going in Gaza, where the Israeli military continues with strikes. What do you take away from that, with him not stopping in Israel?
Well, I think primarily it was a security concern. Israel is about the size of New Jersey. You can't even turn a plane around in Israeli airspace. It's so small. And the idea of an announced trip by Air Force One coming in there and the possibility of something happening is very, very high. Diplomatically, I think Trump was signaling that the United States has interests in the Middle East that don't necessarily involve Israel. On the other hand, he never missed a chance to praise those countries that have signed the Abraham Accords, normalizing relations with Israel, and to hope that other nations will do the same. So Israel was very much on his mind, even if it was not on his itinerary.
Got about a minute left with Ed Lynch. I do want to ask you to wrap up. Mm-hmm. Foreign policy, Ed, and you've studied it for years. Does foreign policy need to be pragmatic, especially when you talk about keeping peace in the Middle East?
Absolutely. I think the United States needs to have some very, very basic rock-bottom principles, such as a support for democracy, such as a support for peace, such as a support for people being able to earn a living. All of those things are important, but how you do those things, how you achieve those goals, you have no choice but to either accept reality as it's presented to you, or live in a sort of fantasy world where you hope and aspire and pray that things will go your way, but but they're not going to if you don't know what's going on the ground.
All right, Dr. Ed Lynch, chair of the Political Science Department at Hollins University, spent extensive time in the Middle East. And Ed, it's great for you to be back, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much.